That's all we need. That is all we need. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Tigers Down Under. I'm your host, Alex, and with me I have Logan. How are you, Logan?
Yeah, good evening, Alex. Yeah, mate, I'm doing pretty well. It's been a lot to celebrate lately, so the mood is very high.
Yeah, what a week to be a City supporter, hey? I mean, look, if we even go back an extra result and you look at the Rotherham game as well, you've got Philogene scoring perhaps one of the goals of the season. You know, people will debate whether or not it was on target or not, but we'll give it to him for the effort. And then we'll talk about the two games that have followed that with Greaves scoring the last minute winner at Huddersfield. And then, of course, yesterday morning against Southampton, where we basically outplayed them for a half of football, if not more. I can't think of too many better 8-day periods as a City supporter.
No, that's right. And I think, you know, we've actually strangely got a little bit of publicity earlier when there was a lot to be said about Rescinia not having won 3 games in a row. And, you know, obviously we had the 2 wins in a row and the third victory just never came. And I think it was a really disappointing result against Swansea. And then what a difference a week makes. You know, we talked about the result at Swansea, but then trailing Rotherham, you wouldn't think that things could turn around so quickly. And to go away to Southampton, who are a team that are flying, and come up with that kind of result, which was just a massive, massive moment. And it signifies a pretty good patch for the club at the moment.
Yeah, as Cam says in the chat, you know, going into the Southampton game with low confidence and then having no striker named in the starting 11, you know, what do we know as supporters? You know, we were calling on this podcast last week, I think, for Zaruri and Carvalho perhaps to make their way out of the team with sort of less impactful performances lately. And of course, they're the two who find themselves on the score sheet. But look, we'll talk Southampton in a little bit. We'll start with that Huddersfield game first of all. It's sometimes a bit hard to cast our minds back to the weekend, but we will try our best. Going into that Huddersfield game off the back of that Rotherham win, Tufan came into the side for Coyle, who, from what Rescinia was saying, was just, you know, managing his minutes, so to speak, after a pretty heavy load, meant that Slater shifted to right back. But, you know, it's a ground that we haven't really done too well at in recent years. I think we hadn't won since 2013 when George Boyd scored in a 1-0 win. So to score after 7 minutes through Greaves really sort of set the nerves at ease, I suppose.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it always helps when it comes early through the form of an unlikely goal scorer, because the confidence kind of, shifted a lot with Greaves kind of having to be the general at the back. When you score a finish, when it's kind of across your body in that nature. I mean, some could argue that the keeper could have done better, but it definitely would have settled the nerves and it gives you something to protect. And I think, that was kind of the story of the result in many ways. That first goal was an insane finish, which, you know, we'll go on to talk about. But yeah, certainly it pretty much was the platform for the next, 85 minutes or so before things got really hairy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, hindsight's a wonderful thing, and coming out of the game with a 2-1 win lets us view that game in maybe a different way than if it had finished 1-1. It's a hard one, I think, in some ways, because I think it was a better performance than the Millwall game where we were similarly, we sort of scored early and then maybe sat back on our haunches a bit in the sort of last 60 minutes of the game. It felt like with Huddersfield that we didn't do that as much. But certainly in the second half, as they sort of upped their pressure, we did start to sit back more and more. How did you feel? Like, I suppose, was there a frustration from you that we weren't sort of more on the front foot in pursuing a second goal to really kill the game off?
It's a difficult one to answer. I think the answer is probably yes and no. And yes, because in the first half, we did seem to play with a little bit less fear and did cause Huddersfield some problems. And I think as the game got deeper in, it was very clear that our intention was to kind of sit back and hold on to the lead. And kind of what came out of that was, no confidence in having possession. And every single time we did look to play out, we'd give it over really cheaply. And then Huddersfield went straight back on the attack. So we invited a lot of pressure. And it's almost like for that last kind of, well, not the last 2 minutes, but that probably 5 or 6 minutes in the closing moments of the game, we really just looked like it was a matter of time before we were going to concede. And and I think it probably again speaks into Rossini's philosophy of how important ball retention is. And if you can't hold possession for that much of the game, then you are going to tire out the opposition. And Huddersfield just didn't really look tired because we were giving possession back to them really quickly and they just, you know, kept coming straight back at us. So I wasn't surprised when we conceded. That's certainly, you know, that's certainly for sure.
Yeah. And it seemed as if it revolved a little bit around, you know, Morton went off after 30 minutes with an injury, maybe changed the balance in midfield. Slater having to push into midfield meant that I think it was Jacob came on at right back and seemed to struggle a lot against Sauber Thomas until we then made the change to put Coyle there to I guess, better contain him. The other change to me that, I mean, I don't think Billy Sharp was doing a whole lot up forward for us, but it feels very harsh and reactionary to pass too much judgment on Ohio after only a couple of appearances. And of course, you know, he scored the winner against Rotherham. So it's very harsh to be too critical of him. But I think against both, was it Swansea or Millwall? No, was it Millwall that he debuted against? I always get those two mixed. I think it was Millwall. And then also against Huddersfield, I just feel like his first touch is really letting him down at the moment. And whether it's just getting up to the speed and pace of the English game and, you know, getting used to the physicality and that sort of thing. I just felt like, to your point about losing the ball or giving the ball away a lot, he wasn't actually retaining the ball as much as we would have wanted our striker to be able to do up the pitch and, you know, sort of cut out the defence. When we get the ball long, we want someone who can then play the ball out and play the channels and get the ball up the pitch. And he's been somewhat disappointing to me. And I saw that he wasn't in the squad against Southampton. And look, that could be just that, you know, Rossini didn't think that he needed Ohio on the bench. He wanted Sharp to throw on for the last 10 minutes if need be. But he hasn't set the world alight as much as I would have hoped that he would coming into the club.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I also think that, you know, my expectations of Billy Sharp are kind of tapered in the sense that I didn't really think that when we signed him, it was necessarily for him to play a, you know, what we say, a highlight role. I think that he is that kind of secondary option and then maybe even a little bit further down the pecking order. But as you say, he was brought into the club to fulfill a very niche role. And, you know, part of that is to be that kind of hold up man that when the ball does get moved higher up the pitch, then we do want him to be able to kind of hold on to it and make the right runs and kind of, you know, build off him. And, you know, I agree. I think it probably is that, you know, he's a little bit rusty at the moment or a little bit flat. But in saying that, he hasn't really played all that much football. And, you know, given his age and there's a lot of question marks about what he was kind of brought in as a signing, I do think that, you know, over the next 13 games and, you know, potential playoffs that, you know, his class and experience will probably be something that is revealed to us over there. I mean, only a week ago on the chat forums were people calling for Carvalho's head. So, like, it's just interesting to keep it all in perspective. I do think that we will still see, you know, some level of input from Billy Sharp. But, yeah, I wouldn't disagree with the fact that he has been somewhat disappointing in the last couple of appearances.
Oh, yeah, though I guess I'm more on about Ohio necessarily than Sharp in that sense. Yeah.
Yep. And that is might well be the case. But I think that when you think about the options that we've got, when you sometimes, you know, Tufan plays up there or we've got Connolly and there's so many other role players in that, you know, that we can use as that like startup striker. So I'm interested to see how Rossini balances the squad. Like it's another challenge when you think about what this transfer window has meant is we've got five or six brand new faces in, and that's a pretty big chemistry shift regardless of how you look at it. And so I think there's a few people still, you know, looking to find their feet.
Yeah. And as you say, I mean, you look at this, yesterday morning against Southampton, we didn't even start with a striker. So it's very difficult to fight for places in that side at the moment, that's for sure. And as Cam says, you know, news on when Delap will return. I mean, I think the talk is that he'd be back for April, which would be sort of the last maybe eight games of the season. So when you consider that we've potentially got him coming back as well at some stage, it becomes a very stacked forward line to try and fight your way into. But another player who has sort of fought his way into that attacking lineup is Abdush, who came off the bench in this one. And, you know, we'll talk that last 10 minutes now. You know, Huddersfield getting that equaliser on the 92nd minute and then Abdush, you know, with that poise, with that calm, in the 94th minute of all times, you know, gets that ball into the box, inch perfect, to lay it onto Greaves' head to score the winner. You know, but equal credit, I think, equal credit to Greaves for the bravery to get his head in there, where people are, you know, sticking boots to try to clear the ball, and equal credit to Abdush for, you know, having that vision and that composure to get that ball inch perfect and get it to Greaves in the first place.
Well, he is hailed as the Turkish Messi, I believe, is what, you know, some people call him. And what was interesting was the response that as soon as Huddersfield did score that goal, the equaliser, it was the moment he touched the ball off the kickoff, like there was a real urgency and kind of poise about him on the ball. And I thought, oh, that actually looks kind of refreshing considering, you know, we just watched us cough the ball up for the last sort of half an hour. And that's what kind of... I don't want to say that I called it, but it just triggered that last little kind of optimistic flash. And then, as you mentioned, when I saw that ball go into the box, it was, you know, it was quite the sight and a, you know, fantastic impact in the last 10 minutes of a game to be able to influence a game like that, given he only had that small amount of time. And as you said, there wasn't exactly too much confidence on the ball across the squad. So I feel like he kind of sparked it prior to his ball in the box. And, you know, it's fantastic to be able to see Greaves get on the end of it and finish the way that he did.
Yeah, we'll give our votes in a second, but just on Greaves, oh yeah, the title of this episode as well. But I feel like, you know, I've seen in a few publications he's been given the 10 out of 10 rating for a game. And I think that's just about the most complete performance you could see from a City player. I mean, I'm sure that you could pull out a Philogene game where he might have scored two goals, or a Coyle game where he's done particularly well. But I think Greaves, as, you know, a centre-back commanding his space, captaining the side for the majority of the game and scoring the two goals, including a last-minute winner for his hometown club, no less, it was just an outstanding all-round performance.
Well, and let's not forget that, you know, in a game in which, you know, he scored early in the seventh minute and then we pretty much invited pressure for the rest of the game, and for him as a, you know, the centre half to kind of control that back line in the way that he did and then pop up with a, you know, last ditch header to win the game. Like, as you say, he was busy on both ends, and absolutely one of the more incredible performances we've seen from an individual in a City shirt. So, yeah. Look, I'm pretty comfortable with seeing that rating at a 10 on some of the websites.
Do you think he'll still be here next season?
Yeah, I do. And I think it probably comes back to, you know, the speculation in this previous season where we were talking about whether you'd take a fee for him, whether, you know, he's got a future at the club. I think well and truly now, you know, from what we've seen in the last like 25, 26 games, you know, it speaks volumes as to the player that he's becoming and maturing before our very eyes, I would say. I think he'll still be here. And I think that'll also have a lot to do with, you know, what our Premier League status is. I know that that's very early and incredibly optimistic, but where we end up will certainly, I would say, probably align with the Greaves. And, you know, he's certainly showing the signs that a Premier League club might be interested. But I do think playing four-hole does mean something to him, which is, you know, interesting.
Or yeah, another fact. Absolutely. Your votes for this game then?
Yeah, so look, it's a standout. I mean, if we were giving out 6 points, you would have to give that to Jacob Greaves here. I think I had Philogene down for two, and I don't know if that's just my rose-coloured glasses at the moment, because everything he touches seems to, you know, turn to gold. And the other person that I had was Alfie Jones for my one vote.
Yeah, great shouts all around. Yeah, no, Philogene's one we didn't really touch on, but he had that chance to put us up 2-0 with that shot that almost, you know... It's a hard one because I'm like, he didn't take it too casually, but he took it very confidently, I think is the word for it, but just didn't shape his body right and obviously hit the post. But yeah, and look, I think we'll probably touch on it more with the Southampton game, but I think it doesn't get talked about enough, his defensive efforts and his tracking back and his ability to block and niggle and win the ball back as well, which is terrific, and not something you'd normally associate with that sort of flashy winger. So definitely does the hard yards as well. Yeah, you know, Greaves for the 3 points is as easy as you're going to get. I went Omer for the two votes. I thought it was a terrific cameo from him as well, getting that assist for Greaves a second. And I went Allsop for the one. I thought, you know, yes, he was at fault for that goal. So I think you could probably pull him out of the votes just on that alone. But I think on the balance of play and the rest of his game, I think the way he commands that area, there was a number of times that Huddersfield were putting crosses in the box or corners into the box, and he was able to claim the ball quite comfortably and calmly, where I think it goes a long way having a keeper who has that sort of confidence and command of his area to help that defence. And you look at, you know, seasons past where the defence might be uncertain about the keeper behind them, and we could end up leaking quite a few goals. But I think Allsop has really kind of come on in the last month or so, since he had that sort of wobbly patch. So I thought he was terrific in that game. Well, we'll talk Southampton now, which was it 72 years? I think it was 1951 was the last time we won there, so 73 years. One of those sort of statement wins, I think, as a club, which, you know, in seasons to go, we'll look back on this game as being such a monumental one. Look, even if we don't go up, I think it's just a statement win that makes teams kind of look at us and go, we really do mean business. And we've talked previously about how few and far between good performances for City have been in recent weeks, and actually, you know, a solid 90 minutes or a solid performance where we've looked back and said, you know, that was a really good performance from the club. And this was certainly one of them. And it was a great return to form against a really competitive side in Southampton.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've nailed it. I think that's one of the things. I mean, look, I want to name and shame you as well, because I think before the game, your match prediction was 2-0 Southampton win. And
I will, in my defense on those claim, it's a bit of emotional hedging where I go, look, if either I get my tip right or City win, I'm happy either way. That's why I do it.
And I think that's the flaw in your game, Alex, if I was to identify this. I think you should have backed the boys. You went entirely against them. And I think that I would put it down to that your tip was probably the turning point to see such a positive result. So I'd encourage you to keep tipping against him. I think it would bode very well for the run into the playoffs. But, you know, all jokes aside, I really did think that this was one of those performances that when I saw your tip, the 2-0, I thought, you know what, he's kind of right. And, you know, the pessimist in me really did go, it's going to be a really difficult fixture, given the fact that Southampton had been kind of stuttering previously, but I think they've had a couple of pretty handy results recently. And I think they would have backed themselves, heading into this game, knowing, you know, like I said, the record at St Mary's is a great one. And the fact that, you know, they were, third heading into the
maybe fourth,
but they are a team that definitely have you know, an incredible squad and a confidence about them. And so for us to travel there and pick up in midweek, no less, I feel like for some reason midweek fixtures away from home seem to be even more difficult. I don't know what's in that, but it was just particularly that first 45 minutes was a remarkable performance, and just the pressure that we're able to put on a squad of that caliber away from home, you know, it kind of speaks to, I think, why we're feeling so optimistic at the moment and why we're looking forward, because not many teams in the division would be able to go to Southampton and, you know, and put in that level of performance and put them under the amount of pressure that we did. It was incredibly brave.
Yeah, and I think I saw the stat that between them, Leicester and Southampton have lost 6 home games this season, and a third of those have been to us, which is quite a remarkable stat in itself. You know, we had Coyle, Seri and Ermer return to the lineup, and I think, you know, talk about Seri in a second, but I think he's a big factor in the performance levels as well. But with Toufan, Morton and Sharp dropping out, Morton obviously with that ankle knock was able to come back on in the second half, which was great to see. But really, I mean, there was a lot of speculation before the game about whether we'd sit back and sort of counter on Southampton, let them have the possession and then go at them. But possession in the first half was pretty 50-50. And really, we did actually just play our own game and just step it up a notch. And Seri coming back into the lineup, I mean, I think it's not a coincidence that our poor performances have coincided with Seri being away at AFCON. And I think with him returning and being able to set that tempo in midfield to break up the opposition, to you know, play those passes out to Philogene and Zaruri on the wings, it's a huge factor in why we were able to play the game that we did. But as you say, I mean, it was just remarkable that the first half, the amount of times that we basically locked the ball into their final third and they just couldn't get it clear, or alternatively, they would get it down to our end and then Allsop would, you know, play a couple of passes with Coyle, and then Coyle would just tear through the Southampton team. And there was a passage of play, I think, where it was essentially a 4-on-3 with City just herring down on the Southampton goal. It was just remarkable.
It was. And I think as well, when you like break it down like that, let's not forget like the depth in the squad. And I do agree. I think the team is very much built around Seri. I think that it's no coincidence that him coming back is critical. He's maybe not the sort of player that you notice all the time, but I think he's very central to kind of starting things for us. And I do think his vision and passing is probably, what does end up starting a lot of our attack. And it was just, I agree. There was some patches in the first half that I was just in awe of and thinking, you know, it's been a long time since I've seen a City team kind of be this dominant, but under really trying conditions. Like it's, you know, wouldn't have surprised me. And I think this probably speaks to your 2-0 prediction. It wouldn't have really been surprising if it was one of those kind of end-to-end games or one where we were really cagey and then found ourselves a goal down and kind of tried to fight back in. But the fact that we were able to just attack from the get-go, it's just, it was almost surprising to watch and pleasantly surprising. Fair play to them.
Yeah, and both goals really coming about through efforts from Philogene. The shot for the first that deflected to Zaruri, and then for the second, you know, we touched on it before, but him pressing and closing down the Southampton defence, winning the ball back, playing a 1-2 with Carvalho to play him in. It's just, we see it in games. Like, so I think the Swansea game, for example, highlights when we don't press as a team. My memory of that game in particular was Tufan would be up high pressing and Zaruri and Philogene maybe not so much and there'd be gaps that Swansea could play through us. But when we press as a team, when Philogene's engaged and playing well, Zaruri engaged and playing well, the difference that it makes and the pressure that we put opposition under is just so highlighted by what happened against Southampton and you know, absolutely led to that second goal, which is a massive credit to Philogene.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, a lot can be made about Philogene in attack, but you've talked about it earlier as well, but it's his ability to also get back and to just have the amount of running in him that he does. He just seems like an ever-present, member. Not only is he kind of mesmerizing defenses and taking on defenders, but he's also back showing up and you know, restoring our shape as well and, really looking to help out the back three or four, depending on what we're playing with. So, you can't speak highly enough of Jadon Philogene's season so far. I know that, you know, he's getting a lot of attention because of the goal, but, we've had the pleasure of watching him week in, week out. And it's fair to say that, you know, whilst he's still kind of raw in some ways, the potential in him and his career is it's fascinating to watch him develop.
Yeah, and I asked you about Greaves before. I'll ask you the same question about Philogene, but maybe I'll say if we are still in the Championship next season, maybe it's more a question of how much do you think he's worth? Because I think certainly if we're still in the Championship next season, he's probably not still a City player.
No, I agree. I think that this is a more interesting case than Jacob Greaves. I think that it's no secret that Philogene is enjoying his football, but I think that the suitors that would be looking for a winger of his capability, the fact that he's also come from Aston Villa and has that, you know, I dare say Premier League pedigree already, I think people, and the fact that he's English as well, probably adds to the, the mystique that kind of surrounds him. But I think he'd be a very incredible, incredibly difficult player to hold on to. I think that the kind of checkbooks would be open and there'd be a lot of interest generated from Philogene. He'd be a much harder one to hold on to than Jacob Greaves, I suspect.
Do you have a number that you reckon you'd be happy to sell him for?
Look, I don't know if there's a number that I'd be happy to sell him for, but I don't think that we'd accept anything. Well, certainly not lower than 15. I think
I think like 20, 25, mate. I reckon more than Bowen at this rate.
And that's what I was kind of going to go on to say is, you know, we're talking about someone who's obviously featured in the young lines. We're talking about someone who has got Premier League pedigree and is now racking up the goals and assists at Championship level in a contending team, and he's English. I think that he kind of ticks a lot of boxes. And I agree. I think, look, if he got sold for anything less than 15, it'd be a travesty. But I do think that the likely number would point upwards of 20. But let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Yeah. Look, I think I think, look, yeah, absolutely. I hope it doesn't come to it, because if it doesn't come to it, it means that we're probably a Premier League club. Absolutely. I think I look at, like, Morgan Rogers went from Borough to Aston Villa for, I think it was 15 or 17 million or something like that. And he's done nowhere near what Philo Jean's done. So yeah, I think definitely upwards of 20 million for sure. Other point on this game before we do our votes, Tufan, I mean, you talked in the Huddersfield game about the fact that ball retention under a senior is so important. And I think Tufan deserves special credit in that second half. When we were under the cosh, when we were struggling, when we were just hoofing it long, Tufan was probably the only one who really had that presence of mind that when he won the ball, he was turning back inside. He was looking for a player. He was looking for a pass. He would press high to try and put them under pressure, and he was calling his teammates in to press him as well. He seemed more than most to be the one that was really trying to settle everyone down, to set that tempo back up and see us through the game. And I think his play really did buy us valuable minutes. And, you know, we'll talk about, you know, 6 minutes of added time kind of came from nowhere. We were sort of exclaiming in the chat about how much time was being added on. But it was certainly a nervy last few minutes. I think Tufan did his bit to see us through it.
Oh, I'd absolutely agree with you. Maybe a question for you is, do you think that the kind of, you could put that play down to the fact that at the moment with the squad depth is something that we're not used to seeing is, you know, there's times where he's getting rest and that he's not playing 90 minutes like week in, week out. And I think that kind of shows that I'm not answering the question for you, but do you think that is legitimately something that does allow a player like him to come in and to feel fresh and to kind of be switched on enough to have that kind of bravery to hold on to the ball in those moments because he's not kind of fatigued and, overworked? Like, does game management have anything to do with that, do you think?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Southampton game, more than most, I think you look at the bench and you look at how strong the bench is and the players that we can bring on, and we sort of applauded in the chat with some of those substitutions with, you know, Morton coming on, Tufan coming on, Traore coming on and really refreshing that midfield. And it's almost the same as when Omer came on against Huddersfield, where you've got these players now who are so fresh that their mind is fresh as well, and they can actually take that moment of saying, well, I've got that perspective on the game. Let's just settle things down and take a breath. And I think, you know, you look at Tufan came off the bench against Rotherham and was really instrumental in Philo Jean's, you know, winning the ball back for Philo Jean's goal. Like, I think his ability or his big sort of strength for us is his pressing, his running, his harrying and winning back the ball. And I think having that sort of rotation and fresh legs for him, you know, not starting every game, but maybe every second game, gives him that ability to really stay fresh and stay focused on what he needs to do. Absolutely. I think he's definitely one of the most valuable players in the squad at the moment, I think.
But particularly when you think about the game plan against how we played Southampton with that incredibly high press for the first half, like 45 minutes of, you know, absolute terror and high intensity. You know, players can't manage kind of 95 minutes of that level of intensity. But when we're able to use the bench and as you say, bring on players of that calibre, then, you know, they are able to kind of show their class and do that particular job really well. So, I don't know, I found that fascinating because I did agree with you. I thought that the way that he closed the game out for us was, was very impressive and probably one of the key reasons we were able to hold on.
Yeah, I'll give my votes first before yours. And look, it's a really tough one because you could really, you know, we say it sometimes, but like literally every player in the side deserve votes in this game because it was just such a terrific all-round performance. I've gone Philo Jean for the three. I thought his efforts for setting up both goals really, as well as his pressing and his continued pressure on the Southampton side was really tremendous. And I thought he had a fantastic game. Someone who, you know, has been sort of controversial, I suppose, with supporters at times is Regan Slater, with whether he deserves starts and what he contributes to the side. But I think it was arguably one of his best displays in the City shirt against Southampton with the way that he played in that midfield role, winning the ball back. His passing as well was top notch. And his composure against a really strong side was terrific. So I thought he deserved the two votes. And then I gave the one to Carvalho. I thought he was his efforts and runs and obviously getting on the end of that pass from Philo Jean for the second goal was terrific. And you know, sort of a couple of weeks of more down performances since he had a really good start to his City spell. And I think he's really responded quite well with, rewarding the faith that Rossignol showed in him with a terrific display.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, as you say, it was a very difficult one to pick. And in many ways, it was kind of throw a blanket over the field, but it really was that complete team performance. But I do want to follow you in. I thought Philogene was worthy of the 3 points. I thought that he was just is crucial, particularly in the first half and the role that he had with the pressing and being able to kind of be so influential in both goals. My 2 points I actually gave to Zorori. I think that obviously the goal helped, but I think he's just kind of been sneakily performing. He hasn't really been setting the world on fire, so to speak, but I think he's been a very positive addition to the squad and one of the new faces that's just kind of plodding along and doing what he needs to do. But for him to chip in with a goal, I think will do wonders for his confidence as well. And I thought he was worthy of the 2 points. And then I gave the 1 point to Carvalho as well. And I'm not sure if it's because of the goal, again, influencing my decision, but I thought he was fantastic. And, another player who hasn't, from memory, I don't know if in both the Rotherham game and certainly the Huddersfield game, I think he might have been brought off early in both of those fixtures. Mm-hmm. But I'm certain that he hasn't played 90 minutes in the last three fixtures. So I thought for him to get on the score sheet and again be part of that instrumental first half, I gave my one to him.
There's a couple of comments in the chat, which maybe we'll do as a quick topic of conversation before we move on to our player review and then West Brom. First, Cam sort of joining in on the conversation about Jaden and the value that he has to the squad and that whether a 20 million fee could be spent on players to contribute as much as he does. And then Ryan following up basically saying, is there a concern about a rebuild in potentially either league, given the reliance on loanees for essentially our best players? The two kind of feed into each other, I suppose, in terms of talking about the contributions that these players have had and how we'd look to replace them next season. And I guess from my perspective, I think we sort of talked about it earlier with Greaves and that it's a problem that we wouldn't necessarily need to worry about if we're in the Premier League, because I sort of foresee if we were to get promoted that guys like Delap and Morton probably would return on loan, if not permanently. And then you've got guys like Philogene and Greaves who would probably happily stick around for a Premier League season with us. The question's probably more difficult to answer if we were still a championship club. And I guess my simple answer is I think I look at the last two winners we've had under Adjun and it's hard not to have faith that he would be able to find other gems and other quality Premier League signings. I think Premier League clubs look at us now and look at the players that we've brought in and how well they've done and probably have a confidence that we can be trusted with young talent to bring through. And I think it's easy to kind of get worried about the future, but, we've got to trust that, the evidence and the runs on the board from the owners and the club that we do have a good sort of culture with bringing these players in and should be able to replace them. But it's a difficult question to answer. I mean, what do you think?
I was going to say kind of along the similar lines. I think that I agree that Jaden Philogene to us is probably worth more than £20 million at the way we're playing in this current squad. But, with promotion, that brings a different framework. Like, do we take this exact team in the Premier League? Well, no, you probably look to strengthen and kind of look at areas where you could improve. But the biggest unknown for us, and this is kind of more towards your point, is we're so used to or have been so used to, a backroom staff and kind of administration that operates so differently. And now that we've seen Adjun take the reins and we've seen Tan and the way that they do business seems very different in the relationships with the players, definitely the communications and relationships that they've forged with different clubs that we kind of negotiate with. And I think Carvalho is the real obvious example of that. The fact that they did kind of trust, Liverpool trusted us to kind of, foster him and continue to nurture his game. And I think that stuff has to count for something. We're looking at two puzzles, which is what would our backroom staff do when faced with a promotion, and what would they do faced with not necessarily a rebuild, but I would almost say like a withhold where, we look at the current players on loan. Are they enjoying their football? Do they suit the needs of the club? Who's staying, who's going? I wouldn't be worried about it. I think it's probably the quickest way to answer it is I think in the, as you said, in the last 2 years, we've learned a lot. We've seen an owner who does care about the club and has really changed the culture in a really quick amount of time. And so I enjoy the ride. I think we can almost rest in some level of confidence that, you know, that what they want for the club is really well intentioned. And I think we've seen evidence of that since they've taken over. And I would kind of trust that they would continue to build that. And they've done nothing in that time to really get the fans offside. Certainly from the way the players speak about how they're managed, they've done nothing to get the players offside. And I think it was Tufan was talking to some of the Turkish guys about coming across because it's like a family club. And I think that when you've got players kind of doing your lobbying for you, it speaks to the culture of where the club's at the moment.
Yeah, and Sarah doing similar with Carvalho to get him across. And I mean, Ryan sort of follows it up by saying it's a great position to be in and feeling confident that it's not an all or nothing roll of the dice because we haven't paid huge transfer fees, which I think is a great point. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is that I sort of look at the signing of Ömer from Turkey as a sort of like that central midfielder or can play on the right wing as almost like the permanent replacement for Carvalho that we've just signed in January instead of the summer. And you look at Panda in goal, could have signed him in summer, but we've signed him in January as potentially that long-term keeper. You look at Giles at left back, it's a loan, but it's, you know, we've got that option to buy him. So I sort of view that as we've bought him already. It's just, you know, for financial fair play, you put the fee in next year. That's, we've sort of brought forward a lot of that business where I don't feel like we're gambling that what has to happen this season. It's also with an eye to, well, if we're still here next season, let's set the squad up in a position that's stable and secure to go for next season. And I've said all season, like, I'd love us to go up this season. Of course I would. But if we don't, I don't think it's the end of the world. And if anything, I think next season it would put us in a position to really go for the automatic spots, if anything. So, I think it's an exciting time. I think you can't get too caught up in the fact we've got a few loan players here, because I think, you know, 12 months ago, we wouldn't have imagined that we'd be signing someone like Carvalho on loan. So, you know, who knows where we'll be in the summer. But speaking of one of our players, we'll do our player review quickly and then we'll round things off with the West Brom game. I'm conscious that it's we've been going for a little while now and it's working its way into the evening here down in Australia. So we'll try not to run on for too much longer, but we'll chat Allsop quickly. Came in the summer for about 200 grand from Cardiff. Was seen as a player brought in to challenge Ingram and played in a way that Rosenia wanted the goalkeeping position to play with, that more, you know, strength with passing and everything else. It's probably a bit of an underwhelming signing. I mean, we're linked with Darlow, we're linked with a few other keepers as well. I think Heaton from United and a few others as well. But he's had 23 starts for us now, 7 clean sheets in that time as well. So we're sort of talking about him before in the Huddersfield game, but he had a sort of a rough sticky patch with that, you know, that first Swansea game. I think he conceded a couple of sloppy goals. He's had a few other sort of the Watford game where he got lobbed from, you know, halfway. But on the whole, I'd actually say he's been a reasonable signing for us.
Absolutely. I think that he's done exactly what Rosenia kind of expected him to do. I'm trying to think earlier on in the season where he did that incredible assist where he kind of saved the ball and did that. Look, maybe Stoke. And I remember in the post-match conference, Rosenia was kind of quizzed about it. And he's like, that's what he does. Like, that's why I bought him here. So there was a real confidence in the way that, you know, Rosenia spoke about him after signing him. As a shot stopper, I think he's incredible, but he's almost like, he does some weird stuff. Like he will save some remarkable kind of goals where you think he had no right to. And then, you know, he is subject to the odd howler, but I don't think that it's enough to kind of disregard him as a keeper overall. I've been really happy with how he's played. And I think that not only is he someone who has like played reasonably well, he suits the philosophy and the way that, you know, Rosenia speaks about playing. So, he's pleasantly surprised me, and certainly a signing that I agree with. You know, when Darlow was kind of the one that we expected to be there, and it kind of forged a pretty, you know, meaningful reputation in a short period of time, the fans certainly wanted him to be there. So it was a surprise when he didn't sign on. But I think Allsop's done a fantastic job, and I would say I'm a fan.
Yeah, I think what you said there spot on with, you know, I think he does have a howler in him, but I think in general his shot stopping is actually not as bad as seems to be made out, and I think he has pulled out some terrific saves. Like, he had a great save in the first half of the Huddersfield game, but of course that sort of gets overshadowed with the nature of the goal that he did concede. I think the way I sort of look at these is if he was a terrific shot stopper as well as being terrific with his feet, he'd be playing in the Premier League, and it's as simple as that, and he'd be a, you know, 5-6-10 million pound goalkeeper. So to be able to get a goalkeeper for 200 grand in the Championship, they're going to have, you know, issues with their game. They're not going to be the perfect player. But I think for what we want him to do, you look at him against Southampton, and really he deserved a clean sheet in that game. I think other than, you know, a bit of sloppy play at the end. And, you know, yes, look, he had that sloppy play with Seri near the start as well, but he dealt with that quite well. So I think he's been, especially value for money. I mean, you look at the fee paid for him as well. I think it's a terrific bit of business, and you've got to be happy that theoretically we're heading into next season with Panda and Allsop as the number one and number two in whichever order. And you've got to be pretty happy with that as your goalkeeper pairing. All right, we'll finish things off with the West Brom game. And I would just give a shout out. We've got, I think, 10 people watching along live. So if you haven't already, if you can hit like on the video, and if you haven't as well, subscribe to the channel so that you know when we're going live in future episodes. It's always great to have, you know, we've had so much discussion today already generated by your comments in the chat, which is awesome to see. So we always appreciate live viewers. So yeah, much appreciated if you hit like and subscribe to the channel as well. It's how we grow, and we really appreciate it. But we'll finish things off chatting West Brom. And I suppose before the Southampton game, I looked at this as arguably the biggest game of the season. I still think it's got a really big part to play in how we finish off the season. But maybe the urgency for the 3 points is sort of diminished a little bit with the win at Southampton. But I sort of look at it, it's a six-pointer. It's, you know, you look at relegation six-pointers, this is a promotion six-pointer in the sense that if we win, it denies them 3 points and gives us 3 points. And if we lose, they kind of go 3 points ahead of us. So I think it's definitely at least a must not lose game. I think if we at least get a draw out of this one, I'd be pretty happy.
Couldn't agree more. And I mean, I'd kind of look at it from a strengths-based approach. Would there be a better, 7 to 10 day period in City's history if we were to beat two Yorkshire rivals, Southampton away, and then beat West Brom at home in a promotion push? Like, it would be an incredible feat. And it feels like there's a real air of confidence. And I don't want to jinx it because, you know, with a little bit of a longer memory, you know, the Swansea performance was pretty underwhelming. But I do think that the confidence that does come from the result at Southampton is a huge boost to be able to go back to the MKM and to, you know, welcome, as you said, a very likely promotion rival. It's a great opportunity to have another win, and as you said, bank kind of one of those six pointers, and you'd certainly be looking up the table if we were able to get a result.
Yeah, and you sort of touched on there, you know, going back to the MKM, and I think Rossini in his post-match after Southampton commented on the fact that the quality of the pitch at Southampton let us play the way that we wanted to play. And you know, I've heard that there's some new solar lights that have been used at the MKM to help the grass grow, and hopefully the weather's been a bit conducive to that as well. But you can't help but look back on that Swansea game as the last home game and think that maybe the pitch is playing a little bit of a part in the poorer performances at home. Hopefully the players can adapt to that somewhat, and hopefully as well, you know, the last three wins, especially galvanising the home support, and we can get a really packed out MKM, you know, cheering on the team and really creating a hostile atmosphere for West Brom.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think that the fact that there has been, you know, three pretty impressive wins, I think the fans will certainly go there with a large sense of optimism. And I think that'll hopefully, you know, translate to, because it's a game of such high magnitude, you know, a bouncing MKM on Saturday.
Yeah. Now, you know, the most difficult question that I ask you, which you always don't like to have to answer it, but what changes do you think you'd make to the side for this one? It's a, you know, more difficult than ever, really, with how we played.
Yeah, I have absolutely no potential way. But even before we came to air, I was kind of mulling over what you could do. And I just don't know. I think that I know that's not a very good answer for, you know, for the podcast, but I really just look at,
yeah,
and it keeps going back to the depth of the squad. It will be totally dependent on the tactics that Rescindia, you know, chooses to operate with and what kind of things he's seen in watching tape of West Brom as to how we approach it. I think, you know, as far as personnel goes, there's no one in the squad, I think, that is kind of, you know, stealing a living or is controversial if they were to be named. I think that overall, there's no one really under pressure. It's just so much about having a full team performance and, you know, being able to do the role that's asked. So I want to say I'd leave it untouched. I know that leaving it untouched means that there will be some subtle changes, but I don't think there's any particular change that we're screaming for, like, oh, you know, we need him. The only thing that I might say is Connolly has, you know, is potentially still our leading goal scorer. I don't even know these days. But the fact that he has been kind of, you know, short on minutes as of late, I wouldn't be too surprised to see him come back into the team for some level of a role. But outside of that, it's a very difficult one.
Yeah, Cam's asking if we discussed why Ohio wasn't in. I think he was left out of the squad. I think Rescindia said it was just purely football reasons that we've had such a strong bench and he just made the call to have Sharp on the bench over Ohio. And because he sort of followed it up by saying he'd like to see him start over Sharp. But I agree with you. I reckon the change for me, if there was to be one, and it would be purely, you know, we'd only be guessing at it, but I look at someone like an Irma and think, is he fit enough to start two games in 3 days? Having, you know, just sort of been working his way back up to fitness after not playing a whole lot over in Turkey, does Carvalho potentially need a rest? Is Morton fit to start? Does Morton come in for, who would it be? I guess it'd be maybe Slater, but then you go, Slater doesn't deserve to be dropped out of that side. It's probably the most difficult lineup to predict since the start of the season, really, because everyone's playing so well and there's just not enough spots to fit everyone in. I'd probably agree with you. I reckon Connolly potentially from the start with Irma dropping to the bench, you know, knowing that we can throw him on with 30 minutes to go like we did against Huddersfield and he can really change the game if we need it. I sort of look at that West Brom side. I think they're a pretty physical side, so a bit like that Huddersfield team. So maybe it is a game to start an Ohio or a Sharp in terms of having that more physical striker. It'll be interesting to see what Rescindia decides to do with it. But it's easy to forget. I mean, we beat West Brom the last time they came to the MKM. I think from memory it was a game where they were very clearly the better team, but I think we got a couple of lucky goals. Might have been Oscar getting a couple, you know, as Oscar was want to do last season, getting a couple of lucky goals. Look, hopefully we can repeat the dose against them in this one. What's your score prediction for this one? How are you feeling?
Well, after the amount of shade that I've thrown at you for your score prediction, I feel like I'm under the microscope with this. I want to stay positive. I really believe that what we saw at Southampton and the fact that we were able to sneak 3 points against Huddersfield, that our tails are up. And I just think I've got a really strong feeling that we're going to be up for this one. I wouldn't be surprised if we conceded. I'm actually going to predict a mirror score from the weekend. I think we're going to win 2-1.
I was going to say, I mean, I think our last three games have been 2-1, so it's a pretty safe scoreline.
Yeah, and I'm going to even add a bit of sauce on this one. I think Carvalho is going to score. I think he's going to score again, and I think we're going to get a random goal from Slater. It's going to be 2-1 City, Slater and Carvalho. There you go.
Well, you know, I've just got to say it's going to be a, you know, absolute belting. I think West Brom's going to win 3-0, and I hope that I'm absolutely wrong on that one, and I'm happy to be wrong on that one, and I'll cop that. No, I think in all seriousness, if we can get a 1-1, I think 1-1 for me, I'd be pretty happy with that to walk away with a draw against West Brom. Yeah. I just, for me, want to avoid defeat because we've now got a bit of a buffer to the teams below us out of the top six. We always seem to say this, right? We always get to this position where we just need one more win and then all of a sudden we've got this buffer in the top six and then we seem to drop it and blow it and kind of fall back to the pack. So I think if we can at least get a draw out of this one and kind of keep our heads above water, so to speak, I'd be pretty happy with this one. But look, you know, yeah, if we could win this game and make it 4 in a row, and that would be what, 6 wins in 7, Yep. Yeah, I'd be booking hotels at Wembley for those of you over in the UK. And I think there's a couple of people in our chat who'll be starting to look into flight prices. So I think it's a pretty massive game. And it's the early game as well. So it's on at 11:30 p.m. Oz.
Yep.
Actually, it might be 11 p.m. Australian time. So nice and early, I suppose, relatively speaking. Yep. Yeah, 11:30. So yeah, don't try to go to, like, I usually go to sleep and get up for the 2 a.m. games. Don't do that because you'll miss the action. But yeah, it's on BN Sports. It's not on Tigers Plus this weekend. So a lot to look forward to, and hopefully we get the positive result out of it. But look, we got one last question from Ryan. Would you guys come over for the playoff? There is Michael, who comes on the podcast regularly, has been seriously talking about it. I think he's just unfortunately discovered he has a clash with his mother's birthday that weekend, so might not make it over. I was terrified for a long time this season it would be against Leeds, but we were going to sort of, I think we still will. We plan to do it at Cheers as we have for previous playoff finals. But I don't know, Logan, would you fly over for it?
I think I'd be banging down there to Hull and Back Boys doors looking for a couch to sleep on. I think it would be really hard to pass up the opportunity with the way that we're playing. It would be something to consider for sure. So I'd say I'm at 80% chance of yes, I would.
And you know what? It's just a shame we don't have a club owner who. Oh, well, hang on. I think he does have a private jet, doesn't he? He could just pop over here and pick us up before the game, couldn't he?
Well, that's your job when we get off there to just bounce that email past the Jun and let him know the credentials of the podcast.
Absolutely. Look, I'll get that in the works if we get the 3 points against West Brom. We'll see how we go. But look, no, thanks so much for joining me for this one, Logan.
Yeah, my pleasure, Alex. Good to be here.
And thanks, everyone, for joining in. Look, we had, I think, 10 or 11 people watching at one point during the stream tonight, which is a massive number. I think it might actually be a record number for us, which is very much appreciated and always makes the episodes more enjoyable when we've got a bit of interaction with you guys. So much appreciated as well. But look, until next time, we've got a big game against West Brom this weekend. So come on, City.
You've been listening to the official Hull City Australia podcast, The Tigers Down Under. For more discussion, join us on Facebook at the Hull City AFC Australia Facebook group, or follow us on Twitter at Hull City AFC Oz. The music was created by Amber and Black. All the city's on fire, with a burning desire. Tigers are roaring, a destiny's calling, cause now is the time. Yeah, the city's on fire. Going higher and higher. There's no turning back 'cause you're